Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Man, how the weather has changed here in the last couple of days. But we still have a bit of humidity. Just goes to show you how things work. We're in the middle of September. Now we're kind of getting the same kind of weather activity as they had for almost a week in the Carolinas, if you will. People really been taking a hit, you know. And maybe one of the programs that we'll do is to really get some ideas about the environment, if you will, what's really happening to the environment. I just don't think folks are being truthful, and I think Al Gore and others were more on point and more correct with regards to what we as the human race are doing to this planet. There have been some very peculiar activities, consequences, disasters, catastrophes, and et cetera in the last couple of years. Report today on national news that a chunk of ice the size of Manhattan is breaking off in the Arctic Circle, if you will. That's a pretty big piece of ice the size of Manhattan, if you will. And by the way, as that iceberg moves into warmer waters, it will begin to melt. The water flow will increase, and kind of makes you wonder what will happen to low-lying areas of our planet, particularly in the Pacific, to very much a lesser degree in the Atlantic, but then across the world along the shorelines of the Asian, South American, African continents, if you will. But hey, man is apparently committed to self-destruction. Even the Bible, biblical, indicates that planet Earth will end at the hand of mankind. Kind of makes you wonder, particularly when you see the kind of activities that are being created. You know, last year we saw Houston, Texas, become a major lake, if you will. People were very concerned from Houston down to Galveston, Beaumont, Texas, and et cetera. It was not a pleasant sight. It's been happening. Right now, as we speak, a tremendous typhoon just off of the coast of China, a typhoon that actually started in the South Pacific, went through the Philippines, swung in through southern China, swung back out to the warm waters of the South China Sea, and then have swung back in and are pounding Hong Kong as we speak, if you will. Massive, massive winds, the level of water and et cetera, and everybody just kind of looks up at the sky and figures that good Lord will take care of us. You know, at some point in time, good Lord probably has decided that we need to take care of ourselves. That's when we're going to have the problem. But a lot going on, if you will. My associate, Mr. Allen, will not be with us again tonight. He's tied up with matters of education, employment, et cetera. And check his website over the next couple of days, because we will be introducing a new program on Saturday mornings here in the Twin Cities. And we will be, after 5 years, leaving this spot, this Wednesday evening slot. We will be leaving that. But, of course, I will continue to be with you on my television program, as well as my own radio podcast coming to from MTN, Minneapolis Television Network, if you will. So we will continue to bring forward the message and et cetera, irrespective of what takes place with regards to the shifting of this program to Saturday morning. But again, check out my associate, Mr. Allen's website. Told him, you know, he needs to explain it, if you will. At some point, we will put the same kind of creativity into our new Saturday program, Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, 9 a.m., as we have for many years here on a Wednesday evening. We did do a Saturday program about 4 years ago. I basically did the program on a Saturday afternoon, direct, straight editorial commentary, and et cetera. I kind of liked it, you know. But I think as many forums and platforms as you can have, based on what is happening in the world and what is happening in America and what is happening to black people, that we need as many platforms as we can get and that we can put together, we can incorporate, et cetera. I hope that doesn't, you know, bother the player haters. If it does, not too bad. A lot of things going on. First of all, this this battle to fill the Supreme Court vacancy, appeals court judge Kavanaugh has run into some problems, if you will, with a situation that happened 36 years ago with a young woman by the name of Olson, if you will. Ford. Ford. Dr. Ford is now her married name, California. Information coming forward that there was sexual misconduct 30-some years ago by Judge Kavanaugh when he was a student at a prestigious private prep school in California. Now some information is coming out that at a private Catholic prep school in Washington, D.C., if I'm not mistaken, there were some activities. I think the statement made by Judge Kavanaugh in 2015 when he was addressing the class of the Georgetown Prep College or Georgetown Collegiate, if you will, is that what happens at Georgetown stays at Georgetown, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. Serious allegations being made. The Trump White House has really bunkered down. The Republicans who want Dr. Ford to come before their committee on Monday of this coming week, or they will move ahead with the vote to move the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh to the full floor of the Senate of the United States. They have the vote, though there is a swaying of two votes that would be a disaster for them. And Vice President Pence would not be able to be the tiebreaker, and et cetera. So we all watch that closely, even here in black America, if you will. People tend to think that we black folks in America don't understand what the heck is going on. Oh, we clearly understand it. These activities, these decisions, this politics, this gamesmanship being played by President Trump and his so-called base is really beginning to tear this country apart. We've talked about this for the last year and a half on this program, on the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's serious. It's really serious, my friends. Many of the institutions, entities, and et cetera are trying to do all they can to pacify us. Well, not pacify black America. No one really cares about pacifying black America. We are, you know, three-fifths within the confines of the Constitution. And, you know, the real club room conversation, the smoke room conversation, the dining hall conversation, and et cetera, is that what black America thinks really doesn't make any difference, if you will. And, you know, sometimes my friends and our listening audience internationally, nationally and locally, I'm not so sure that we don't buy into that, and that we minimize our relevance, our importance, our right to live, to be creative, if you will, to have a vision for a nation in which we enjoy all of, quote-unquote, the pleasures, if you will. The pleasures in the sense of prosperity and opportunity and safety and et cetera. And so it's interesting to watch this nation tear itself apart in a couple of months. What is it, the 6th of November? We will have the midterms. newspaper articles coming out now that the Republicans are in trouble in some states there where Donald Trump won, you know, with 80%, like West Virginia, with 80% of the vote. It is now being called by the prognosticators and et cetera, too close to call. It will be very interesting. Here in our own Shangri-La, if you will, Minnesota, front page, big front page article this morning, Minneapolis Star Tribune, saying that the AG's race, that's the Attorney General, that Congressman Keith Ellison, Democratic nominee, endorsed, if you will, is in a close race with the Republican contenders to Wardlow. I'm not surprised in this corner, based on some of the controversy that is going and following the coattails of the congressman, if you will. There's conversation that there will be some more allegations by the ex-girlfriend, if you will, Karen Monahan. That's going to be interesting if that happens, because I think that this race for attorney general in the state of Minnesota is much closer than just 4 points, if you will. By the way, it is not good to be an attorney general in the United States federal government. Poor Jeffrey Voter Guard Sessions of Alabama is really taking a whipping from his boss. I mean, you know, it kind of reminds me of the white version of 12 Years a Slave, if you know what I mean. I mean, Donald Trump is just whipping this man. It's clear that one of the things that would re-ingratiate Voter Guard Sessions to Big Donald would be to fire Robert Mueller, the special counsel. Some say if he does that, of course, before the midterms, 6th of November, that they will be impeachment, particularly if the Republicans lose the United States Senate, which all of a sudden is much closer than what they want to admit to. All of this should be relevant to the sons and daughters of the African, if you will, because we normally, in the history of this country, become the target of white anger, if you will, white frustration, if you will, and et cetera. And so we need to keep that in mind as we watch the circus, but a very dangerous circus that is taking place with regards to this particular action, a nomination process, and the vote to confirm as the ninth Supreme Court Justice for a man, Judge Kavanaugh of the appellate court of D.C., seemed to have been comfortable initially in playing what he thought was a pretty cute game, similar to what Clarence Thomas, you remember old Clarence, if you will, attempted to do everything he could to destroy a black woman. In this case, it is a white woman, Professor Ford, who is being cut at, attacked, threatened. Can you? Yes, you can. I was getting ready to say, can you believe that threats have been made against her life? But we live in America, and we in black America lost some strong sons and daughters to the murderous hands, if you will, of white terror in America, particularly in the 1950s and particularly in the 60s. But history shows that we always were targets, if you will, the sons and daughters of the African, with regards to the anger, the frustration of massa. That's the reason that it is so crucial to know your history, to understand your history, to be able to research and evaluate the information, evidence, documentation, and et cetera. Unfortunately, we don't do that enough, if you will. And in many regards, we are suffering the consequences of that kind of lackadaisical attitude that we just spend time listening to rap music and looking at our iPad as we walk down the street. In some cases, people looking at the iPads as they drive, if you will. Some of them don't stay around very long, if you know what I mean. So we see all of this coming as we move into tonight's program, if you will. Kavanaugh, The Trump base shows extreme anger, if you will, beginning to become frustrated. And by the way, and we've been saying this on the program for a number of months, we've been so absorbed. Well, I have to say on a personal note, I'm not absorbed by what I see happening. As a historian, I study the mindset, quote unquote, of this country, of this planet, and the mindset of those who identify themselves as a certain base, if you will. Said just a couple minutes ago, you need to be very, very careful about the level of anger. And we said that predicated on two more, you know, mass shootings today. One just in our sister state, just outside of Madison, Wisconsin, if you will. Gunman comes in, shoots, three people. He engages the police in the gun battle, is shot and killed, if you will. And then in the southwestern corner of Pennsylvania, a gunman goes into the courthouse, actually. They tried to downgrade it there for a number of minutes until you started seeing the sign on the building, municipal court building, if you will. Individual shot his way in through the front door, so much for the metal detectors. Broke into the courtroom, opened fire there, wounded four. He then engaged police in a gun battle in which this individual, second one, killed during the day. Is killed at the hands of police, though a couple police officers were wounded. And the frequency of these terrorist activities is increasing dangerously here in our beloved nation, if will. And then you have all kinds of other problems in other places around the world. And in the meanwhile, the North and South Koreans seem to be, you know, hugging and shaking hands, and are beginning to embark on a plan of action that, oops, it does not bode well for the United States, if you will. In the meanwhile, our president, a man who has no fundamental understanding, I repeat that again, has no fundamental understanding of what it takes to be president of a nation, if you will. God, oh God, where is Barack Obama gone? Oops. Term limitations, you know what I'm saying? Some people are now saying that Barack Obama, though he, you know, was elected for two terms, was not as bad a negro as we initially thought, if you will, as we said he wasn't born in America, called his beautiful wife and his beautiful daughters monkeys, chimpanzees, and et cetera, did whistles and said that it wasn't anything to do with race, if you will. Some of them same folks talking amongst themselves at the local, you know, bars, if you will, watering holes and et cetera, and repeat what we just said seconds ago, saying that maybe that nigger wasn't as bad a guy as we thought. One of the things that, and there are a number of things, by the way, that do not block into a particular category. This trade war that's now going on, front page again, New York Times and Minneapolis paper and et cetera, talk in terms that the tariffs have become a tariff Cold War situation, if you will. For those of you here in the Twin Cities, read the front page of your morning paper, if you will, to enlighten yourself. Be concerned deal with the impact that these tariff battles, these trade embargoes and et cetera are having. Already here in the Midwest, this program emanates from the Midwest, from the state of Minnesota, if you will, as I know those of you who have been longtime listeners already know. But there is beginning to be pain, if you will, amongst those that are really identified as the base, the firm, strong, almost fanatical base of Donald Trump, who are seeing things happen. We know, we must understand, my friend, that we're being spoon-fed, if you will, with regards to how great things are. The African-American community grows weary of being told that these are the best numbers since slavery. And the reason that some of us who are black say that is that, of course, in the days of slavery, if you will, we always had gainful employment. We, all of us, worked. You know, we weren't compensated, if you will, but there was a 100% employment amongst the Negro race. And no one has the guts really to say that when I hear white commentators and in some cases Negro talk in terms of how great things are in the economy and such. But the economy, my friends, let us be clear, crystal clear tonight on this international, national, and local program, that the upper 2% of the American population, if you will, is doing extremely well, very, very, very well. I mean, not only are they making a lot of money, they're embezzling and stealing a lot of money, if you will. In the meanwhile, you begin to see a pattern. If you look around, many people put blinders on because they don't want to see it. A lot of small, you know, family-like businesses, if you will, are disappearing. You're seeing more and more signs that say, you know, for rent, for lease, et cetera. And you have to, particularly in a country that has been so manipulated by Vladimir Putin and the Russian government, you know, really starting with the presidential election of 2016, though there's now evidence that is beginning to emerge that indicates the Russians have been tinkering with the American electoral system for a couple of years prior to 2016. But the Russians have so much control now. As we speak on this program tonight, if one is honest with oneself, if you are clear with understanding what the hell is going on around you, you know that as we speak right now, there is major hacking going on. Now, what's being hacked, we couldn't tell you right at this very moment, if you will, but you have a pretty good idea. You know, commercial businesses are being hacked, if you will. Government entities are being hacked, if you will. Contractors who have contracts with the government being hacked, if you will. Information is being stolen, manipulated, and et cetera. And, of course, it is costing the American public who can least afford it. That's what's so tragic about this. Hundreds of thousands of people, in some cases millions, having their accounts hacked into, having their life savings disappear, and et cetera. And really, there's no insurance to cover that, if you know what I mean. And so, in the first, you know, half hour of tonight's program, it's just important that we talk a little bit about the dark clouds kind of rolling over us as a nation. And I'm just not sure, my friends, that we have the kind of plan, solution, if you will, to fight this off. And that's the reason we started with regards to the environmental conditions on this planet. The environmental conditions, the weather patterns, and et cetera, that we are seeing. There's something just not quite right at what's happening. And on that particular note, the reason it is not quite right is because we're not getting factual information. We're not really being told. We don't have a chance to look at the pictures coming in from the satellites that are, you know, evolving and rotating around this planet, giving us angles that are every angle imagined, if you will. Not looking at the heat patterns, the heat flows, if you will, and et cetera. There's something just a little bit scary about that. Now, that takes us back to something we said about 9 minutes ago. We have become so enthralled, if you will, so engrossed about Donald Trump and his presidency, and et cetera. We're missing the daily stories that are happening in the hamlets and enclaves of America. Example, the two shootings today, as an example. Now, you can also believe today that there was probably at least six, seven, or eight, or nine police shootings of young African Americans. okay? But we may hear about it, we may not hear about it. If we have a relative in the Pacific enclave that it has happened, it may get a phone call, and et cetera. If not, we will miss it. If it is talked about, it will be talked about 2 or 3 weeks after it has happened, if you will, and there will be no further discussion, reflection, analysis, particularly analysis of any, you will. And that is really not good for a populace that thinks, because that's really what we do. We think that we are very enlightened with regards to it, what is going on around us. Many of us don't know what's going on in the next block unless someone tells them or there's some gossip that goes on and et cetera. I mean, that, and we're really serious. I'm really serious on this program about that because I'm amazed at the things that are happening right here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul that affect, quote unquote, the future and the safety of the sons and daughters of the African. And folks, they just don't know. I'm fascinated just this week alone in talking to people and ask them about situations in which black lives have been lost, wounded, and et cetera. And folks don't know. And, you know, these same folks sitting right in front of the TV said most of the day, you know, listening to the radio most of the day, and et cetera. And things just kind of get away from there. I repeat what I said just a couple minutes ago. I bet you there were at least 7-8 shootings of young African Americans by police around the country, if you will. And so you see these patterns coming, and you then begin to wonder just how enlightened we are, just how much we really know about what the heck is happening. But on the other hand, there is a desperate attempt, and we're going to share some of that with you now as we move into the last 29 minutes of tonight's program. We had the pleasure yesterday on our television program from MTN. I mean, that's the Minneapolis Television Network for those in our international audiences, if you will. Minneapolis Television Network, which was founded by the community and et cetera, almost was gutted by former Mayor R.T. Ryback a couple of years ago. And I mean gutted. I mean the city just took the franchise money that came to MTN as a part of an agreement made many, many, many years ago when cable television came to the Twin Cities, if you will. For those of you that don't remember, those of you that don't know what we're talking about, we were talking about the first company to come in, Rogers, if you will, coming out of Canada, if you will. People were, you know, so enthralled that we were having this new thing called cable, et cetera. In fact, the price of cable was never supposed to go beyond $35 a month. And for any of those of you that doubt the authenticity of what I just told you, call up your councilman if you live in Minneapolis. Tell them to go upstairs in the tower at the Minneapolis courthouse there, that big old tower with the clock, and pull out a copy of the franchise agreement between any future cable company and the city of Minneapolis, and how money was to be set aside for community programming and et cetera, and why the Minneapolis Television Network is almost broke, if you will. But anyways, yesterday on my program, radio and television, simulcast, I had the opportunity to talk to two people who are visionaries, and I want to indicate to them, one of them certainly is well known in all of the circles of power and wealth, philanthropic giving, and et cetera, and that's the Mike McKnight Foundation. And the chairwoman of the board and the heir to the McKnight Bremer fortunes, if you will, Erica, gave us the consideration and decided that she wanted to announce, joined by one of her chief consultants and advisors, Sherman Patterson, formerly of the Minneapolis Police Department's administrative staff and the liaison to the communities of color, Sherman, who is also a master sergeant in the United States Army, if you will. Just a very talented brother. He and his lovely wife, Sandy, who is one of the four daughters of one of the most legendary law enforcement officers in the history of this city, the late Raymond Presley, first African-American inspector of police, if you will, in the history of this park in the 1970s, appointed by then Chief Elmer Nordland, a heck of a guy, a man of his word. But Erica and Sherman joined me on the set yesterday as we did both a live broadcast. The television piece was also being shown on the website of MTN, but will be shown on at a regular time on MTN at 5 on Sunday, and then 5 or 6 times during the week. But Erica has put together, working closely with Sherman Patterson, a beautiful plan to deal with some of the absence of opportunities in the area of recreation and other areas for specifically young African Americans. See, many people did not know that Erica worked first for the Boys Club in South Minneapolis. They just thought she was a young white girl walking around, with jeans on and tennis shoes and et cetera, not knowing that she was the heir to a billion-dollar empire, if you will. And then for those of you that will say to your friends that you knew, and for the others, I don't know what you'll say, she went to work. She came over to North Minneapolis, and she went to work for the West Broadway YWCA. And Erica worked there, if I'm not mistaken, for 6 years. No one had any idea that she, as we said before, was the heir to the Bremer McKnight fortune, if you will. And she now sits as chair of the board of the McKnight Foundation and all of the Bremer Empire and et cetera. But she is actually beyond that, and in the tradition of her beloved grandmother, Virginia McKnight, Bremer, she has gone out to do things on her own. I remember when I first heard about Erica a number of years ago, as she was being really prepared to take over, she was actually rounding up cows and, well, the herds of cattle and et cetera on the big ranch. And I mean, they got a big ranch. The McKnight Empire has a big ranch out there in Montana. And her grandmother, in many respects, prepared her and indicated to her it was important for her to continue to carry out the legacy of Virginia McKnight, and that was to do many different things with the McKnight fortune, which came from quote-unquote major American corporations like 3M, the Bremer Financial Empire, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. And so for those number of years over there on the north side, where people used to see this young, tall, blonde, if you will, moving through, working closely with the children of color, and et cetera, people just assumed that she was some, young white girl trying to get her degree, and et cetera. Well, anyways, she has embarked on a major project the property has already been bought here in North Minneapolis, or there in North Minneapolis, and it's at the corner of Plymouth and Lindale Avenue North, and it is a facility that probably will run as much as $40 to $50 million. It will have a couple of pools, including a Olympic-sized pool. Erica has been working diligently with the youth of the African-American community, particularly in North Minneapolis. She said on the program yesterday about a national award that was won by some of you young African Americans in 2011 at a national competition in California with regards to the things that you were involved in, education and such things as that, and actually won a national award. That was in 2011 for you African American parents out there whose children brought such joy to North Minneapolis and etc. Didn't get the kind of coverage and publicity from the Minneapolis Star Tribune should have based on that 2011 victory by a program that had been put together by Erica and later joined by Sherman Patterson working together and etc. And so yesterday on my program on MTN, it was a sense of reward to talk to two individuals, one white, one black, who had such a commitment and such a vision. That's what's important. Now, Sherman Patterson also is an independent entrepreneur, for those of you that know him and have known him since he relocated here and ultimately married a daughter, one of the four daughters of, as we said, Inspector Raymond Presley. Again, the history. Sherman has been a very enterprising individual, and I think that you will, looking for an associate, if you will, someone to work with her to bring about a series of dreams to deal with the problem. And one of the things that he talked about on my program yesterday at MTN, the Minneapolis Television Network, was that when she was working at the YWCA on West Broadway there, that began to catch her attention was the horrifying stories that Minnesota, percentage-wise, has the largest number of African Americans who count. And that's because we don't have the facilities. And I remember a conversation a year ago when the plan was being put into play, and it came up, and a number of individuals who were part of Table, if you will, that Erica and Sherman Patterson had put together, talked in terms of their coming up in the segregated South, and they were talking in terms of how difficult it was for young African Americans, old African Americans for that matter, to be able to find something other than the watering hole or come off the banks of the local river, if you will, to Tallahatchie or the Mississippi or the Missouri or et cetera. And I remembered my own place of birth, Kansas City, Missouri, and I remember upon my return as I began to mature as you were coming out of high school here in Minnesota and visiting my grandparents and relatives in Kansas City, because Kansas City is a peculiar city because there's actually two Kansas City, Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City, Kansas is basically, by and large, a integrated facility. It was the so-called free state during the so-called Civil War. Right across the Missouri River, if you will, you can look from downtown Kansas City, Kansas to downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and you're looking at segregation. In fact, I can remember the activities in 1955 when agreements were reached by black organizations, the Urban League, the NAACP, the Black Pastoral Alliance, and the Motion Picture Operators Association of Kansas City, Missouri, and finally agreed to desegregate motion picture theaters in Kansas City, Missouri, and particularly downtown. And I can remember as a 14-year-old young Negro being told that I could, I was home for Christmas, if you will, that I could go visit and could attend. But it had formerly been just a couple months before a segregated motion picture theater. You talk about a nervous young black man, because also what had happened for those of you that come out of Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, et cetera, all of the eateries, such as Kresge's, Woolworth's, had been desegregated, and you didn't have to go in and stand up and eat. You could actually sit down at the counter and et cetera. And that even for young Negro such as myself, who was visiting my birthplace, it was still a little uncomfortable. One sat down and saw the stares of some of the people, but things had changed. The black leadership of Kansas City, Missouri, and later to be joined by their fellow associates in St. Louis and St. Joseph, and et cetera. It was a little bit tougher in rural Missouri, as some of you know. Some of those towns, you only had one motion picture theater, and folks really, you know, had maintained that they had done right by the Negroes a couple of years earlier, you know, back in the 40s and the 30s, by letting Negroes sit up in the balcony. A history that, unfortunately, many of our young people don't know anything about, because you really don't see it in the book. Periodically, somebody will write publish a entity called a book, if you will, and talk in terms of how segregation was in their town. But you know what? It's hard to get a publisher to print that kind of book, because folks got us hoodwinked that, you know, it's always been equal here in our beloved America, that, you know, little black children and little white children can all come together in the center. Man, that's the furthest thing from the truth. In fact, on that particular note, and this program is also about history and education, it was interesting how the white folks determined the laws. Now, in some cities, in some states, the procedure was, particularly after segregation really came into play around 1902, 1904, 1905, that you could be in, and let's give Missouri as an example, if you will. It's 1950, 1951, and in Kansas City, you could not go downtown or go to a white movie at all. And in fact, that caused the black folks in Kansas City, Missouri, to be very enterprising, if you will. In fact, Kansas City at one point had four top-rate theaters, if you will, spread throughout the black community for those that have a history in Kansas City and know that history. And yet, you could go up the road to, let's say, St. Joe's, and let's say there were three motion picture theaters in St. Joe's, and the way the deal had been cut maybe 15 years before, you know, 1937, 38, something like that, is that Negroes could go to the movies, okay, but they had to sit in the balcony. We had to sit in the balcony. Now, in other places, you know, let's say you then went down to Arkansas, is that not only could Negroes not even have or buy a old theater or et cetera, there was no policy that allowed Negroes to be in the same building with Caucasians and et cetera. Now, this was all relevant to the fact that the one thing that was always clearly separate, no matter what, was the water faucet and the laboratory facility. And that's for our refugees and immigrants of color who have come here and do not understand the battle and the importance of understanding what the rules of engagement were in the United States of America, my friends, because you had to be very careful, because there were black folks that lost their lives because they drank out of the wrong faucet, if you will, water faucet, either by intent or by accident. There were Negroes who lost their lives because they made the mistake of going into a cafe and not going around to the back door and maybe becoming defiant, or a determination was made that they were uppity and that the Negro community in that little town or that medium-sized city had to be taught a lesson. I remember well one of my grandfathers telling me how the city of New Orleans changed up until 1910, 1911. New Orleans was not a segregated city. And yet there was an incident there, and a white priest was killed by a black man. And things overnight changed, and Negroes were told they could no longer go to the so-called talkies, so-called motion pictures. But the key was, when Negroes started being told they had to ride in the back of the streetcars, you know, you're talking 1911, 1912, Woodrow Wilson is on his way in as president of the United States. So a white man, governor of Virginia, become president of the United States, who really capitalized on that new policy called segregation. All these things, my friends, relevant and going back to having an understanding of the battles that the African American has had to fight in this country. And it goes then even back to this program and making our people understand the battles that have been fought, a better understanding of why it is not improper for the African-American community, for the sons and daughters of the African, to demand respect, if you will, and to demand accountability from the so-called democratic institutions that exist. And the reason that I say that, I had a long friend this morning who was talking in terms of the battle that is now going on between and inside of the Democratic Party. Yes, my friends in the Democratic Party. And by the way, on that particular note, we may have, according to my associate, Mr. Allen, we may have Ray Dean, who is running for the legislative seat in the legislative district. Is 59D? Yes. Because the Democratic Party here in Minnesota isn't as happy with us colored as they would like to be as we move into the last 10 minutes of tonight's program. And I think it's just so important that we have a little better indication from the Democratic Party that there will be a policy of, you know, sharing. You know, we certainly always have to share the defeat of the Democratic Party, you know, i.e. Hillary Clinton and et cetera. But we never proportionally receive the kind of goodies, if you will, from the success of the Democratic Party. You know, I said to some folks on this program intentionally that in the history of the DFL, which was actually formed in 1944, Farmer Labor Party, that's how it became the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, the DFL. And by the way, it was an African-American woman by the name of Nellie Stone Johnson, God bless her, who was one of the signatories to that. But ever since the merger, and even before that, obviously, there has been only one occasion where an African American, a Negro, a black, if you will, has received at least the endorsement of the Democratic Party to be on the statewide ticket until Keith Ellison came along just a couple of months ago. But Elmer Childers sought and won the Democratic Party endorsement and nomination. Find that in any history books around here. You have to come to those of us who are black historians, actually historians all the way, because I know my history extremely well of many different so-called groups. But Elmer Childers, a veteran of the Second World War, if you will, just a tremendous guy, was a repairman, if you will. Had gone to school, was a repairman for the old Bell telephone conglomeration and et cetera. And I can well remember the feeling up here in Duluth. That's where it was. The Democrats were having their convention. Again, for all of those of you that want to have amnesia, that the Democrats had their Democratic convention there, and I can well remember how many of us felt. A couple of us were delegates to the Democratic Convention when Elmer Childers received, yes, let me repeat that again, Elmer Childers received the endorsement, becoming the first Negro to receive the endorsement of the Democratic Party for statewide office. And Lord have mercy, you didn't have another one until, wow, think about it, 47 years later with regards to Keith Ellison, if you will. So, and we hope Congressman Ellison keeps that in mind and as an appreciation that he walks for a constitutional office in the state of Minnesota. He walks in the footsteps of a man by the name of Elmer Childers. Again, you can't find Elmer Childers. Elmer Childers later became the first, oh my God, here it is again, the first and only African American to be appointed as Commissioner of Veterans Affairs in the state of Minnesota by then Governor Wendell Anderson, if you will. We always think in terms of our good friend Tom Kemp, the father, if you will, of a young lady that was the chairperson of the Minnesota Sports Facility Commission, who stepped down as last year. All this history is important because one of the things that has been happening, and I've heard some of you say it, I've had some of you approach me and talk about it, if you will, is that we really don't have a clue of what our history was. And the reason I say that, there was the gala opening of a museum in the world headquarters, if you will, of floor construction there on Penn and Plymouth Avenue, and people were sitting up on top of the deck there and looking down on the community and to some degrees the poverty, if you will. I just hope that those of you that were enjoying the gala affair this past weekend at the four world headquarters, I hope that you kind of remember and bring yourself to understand that this wasn't something that just happened because a group of black folks came to Minnesota 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. A lot of these things were a long time coming. And so that takes me all the way back to the interview that we did yesterday here in the Twin Cities with one of the most powerful women in the United States and a young African-American who himself has become a successful entrepreneur, but who has made a commitment to work on behalf of the future of our community. And you know, the future is your children, the same ones out there that most of you are ignoring as, quote-unquote, the violence continues. Yes, 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 I hate to say it. The violence continues, you know, the shootings continue. A little secret for you is that ever since January, basically, we have had a person shot, African-American, shot and wounded, if not killed, every day since the 1st of January of 2018. And it is really unfortunate that we are not able to speak with greater authority. I'm talking about the leaders and et cetera, with greater authority being and demanding greater, quote-unquote, concern about our future, if you will, though we have a responsibility to look inward at ourselves, because you just can't roll out every time a white policeman shoots and kills a black person and say you're enraged. You need to be equally enraged, you know, when two men shoot each other down and both die in a hostile action on 26th and Emerson, if you will. Or a gentleman steps outside to have a cigarette because an ordinance requires that he do that, and somebody else who has gone berserk for whatever reason only they and Satan know, firing his weapon wildly and shoots and kills this young man who was doing nothing more but enjoying a beer after his late night duty at a local hotel. There are so many other situations and things of trauma. Oh, I hear that quite a bit lately, is that we need to deal with the trauma, et cetera. And by the way, I hear that one of the young ladies that have been talking about on the news, that there had been some impropriety to how she and her relationship with a political figure was going, is getting ready to come forward with some additional information about the trauma that she has suffered through, and that there needs to be accountability for that trauma and et cetera. And so tonight, as we wrap here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, we watch closely the Kavanaugh, if you will, circus in Washington, D.C., it'll be interesting to see how Dr. Ford will be handled, how she will be respected, if she will be respected. And I cannot understand, in closing, given how much of a law and order nation we are and how much of a law and order party the Republicans are, I cannot understand why they cannot set aside an investigation and an examination, or until that investigation or examination is complete and, quote-unquote, there is an examination of the allegations that Dr. Ford has made with regards to the appellate court judge who wants to be a Supreme Court justice for the rest of his life, if you will, and that's an appointment for life. And so it'll be interesting to watch this as in the coming days, if you will. And as we said at the top of this program, there are so many other things happening. It's quite clear that America really doesn't have control. And one of them is what's happening right now on the Korean Peninsula, where the leaders of North and South Korea have come together and are trying to work something out and have told the United States they really don't need them to be at the table as a third wheel or the third leg on the stool or whatever, and however that they, the sons and daughters of Korea, can work the situation out, if you will. We watch all this closely, my friends, because these are, in fact, turbulent times in America. Many do not want to accept or embrace that maybe this is not the America that our forefathers and foremothers at least thought about. Now, certainly, for those that always talk about the importance of knowing and understanding, quote-unquote, the America and Donald Trump's Make America Great Again. Now, we all know when Donald Trump talks about making America great again, he's talking about sending us back in chains, okay, putting us in bondage and making us the best employed group of individuals on the face of the nation, the African-American. We'll all have jobs and employment. We won't be paid, but, you know, we will be, quote-unquote, the most employable group of human beings in the United States of America. All of these things are important. Much of it should sometimes be spent with you encouraging your children to do a little bit more reading, a little bit more absorbing, a little bit more inquiry. You know, one of the things we have to teach our children in an appropriate and respectful way is to challenge the teachers and the educators who, quote-unquote, provide to our children that which is the reputation on one hand and the future on the other. We appreciate, again, as we said, we will be coming back on Saturday. Mr. Allen will be getting that information out. Continue to stay strong, my friends. You'll be hearing us again, as we said, on Saturday. But continue to stay strong and continue to stay vigilant. I'm Ron Evans.